Apple shares were just getting hammered this morning.
Every day they're pounding it.
Bitcoin.
I'm not fucking leaving.
The problem is.
Welcome.
Episode six,
The Trillionaire Mindset.
I'm Ben.
I'm Emil. Thanks for tuning back in.
We love you very much for doing it. Check the disclaimer in the description.
That only applies to Ben. You can still sue me.
Yeah, still sue him. He's it's worth millions.
It's a thrill for me.
We got a lot to cover this week.
So much.
I think first off the, you were telling me that you had...
Oh, well, number one, the Stanford thing is getting way out of control.
It's getting really bad.
It was a stupid joke.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if I told you, it's out of hand on all sides. Someone sent in a video of, to the Trillionaire Instagram, and they were following someone who had a Stanford Business School backpack. Did you see it?
I did see that.
First, there was a picture and it said, "Do you want me to beat them up?" And then it was a video of them following them, and it was very uncomfortable. Don't beat anyone up. It's a joke.
Don't beat anybody up. It's a joke.
Then we might actually get sued.
Yeah. No, but
that, it was scary. It was very visceral watching someone follow
a stranger.
Yeah.
And this person had no idea. Yeah, well,
that there was some dumb joke on a podcast. No, but it's out of hand on all sides. I got this very scary voicemail.
Really?
I think.
I wonder how they got your phone number.
Can we play it? Let me see.
Hey, I hope I got the right Emil, the co-host of the Trillionaire Mindset. My name is William. I'm the president of the student council at Stanford Business, and I just wanted to reach out and say, you're a worm. The both of you are worms.
Me too?
You're nothing. I see you, I see your little show, and it looks like nothing. It looks like worms. A dried worm on the sidewalk. I see you, I wouldn't even give you my spit to bring you back to life. Because you know how you could sort of bring a dried worm? I wouldn't even give you my spit. So if y'all keep talking sweet over there at Trillionaire, I'm going to have to come down there and wipe those little smiles off your little worm faces. And guess what? The smile's also your asshole because it's just the one thing. Fuck you.
Wow. William, was it?
Yeah.
I'd like to see you come down to the studio and put your money where your mouth is, pal.
Yeah, where your asshole is,
yeah.
Apparently.
Let's see it. Prove it.
Because you're the worm.
Prove how tough you are. Drive all the way. I don't know where Stanford is. Northern California?
Yeah.
Is that?
Up there in Stanford, California.
Is that really where?
No, I think it's in Palo Alto.
Oh, well, get your rich butt down here, William. Billiam. Yeah, what a dumb name.
Yeah, so I
make up your mind. Is it Bill? William?
I regret the whole thing. I want it to go away.
You want to let the dust settle?
I mean, I'm trying. We agree to not have anyone follow anyone.
You should arm wrestle William.
Or
you'd probably win.
We've all seen the picture of me on your shoulders. We should chicken fight.
Chicken fight, yes. That's a good idea.
We'll chicken fight anyone, any alumni, staff.
William, get on your dad's shoulders because you'd be used to it because I'm sure you're always on your daddy's shoulders.
Oh.
Son, yeah, that was a burn. I served it up. What are you going to do about it?
He's going to come kick our ass, that's what.
All right. Oh, hey, before we keep going, I wanted to give a quick shout out to Megan Quigley. Hi, Megan. You're doing great.
Who's Megan Quigley?
She's a friend of the podcast.
Nice. Hey, Megan.
And we did an Instagram poll for you guys asking who you'd like us to have on as guests. A lot of suggestions for your mom and D's Nuts.
Yeah, top two were your mom and D's Nuts. So thanks for reminding us that the internet is a nightmare.
Thank you. One person said Ben's dead dad, which was very funny. I actually got a kick out of that. But we also had a lot of very good suggestions.
Some serious ones.
Yeah, that we're trying to make happen.
We're working on it.
We appreciate you doing all of the work for us. Yeah. So any and all ideas, just send them our way so we can take all the credit. And
we will see if we can do some kind of seance to get Ben's dad on.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd actually be really tight.
If you finally got to talk to your dad again.
If we did a Ouija board, it would just spell out F-A. R-T. It'd be like, ah, that's him. Oh, boy. We want to remind you guys to leave a comment on this video. Smash that like button.
Smash the likes.
Break your computer. Quit your job. Don't kill your parents, etc. Thumbs up it wherever you go.
Yeah. Also, there's been some confusion in the comments. And I will say, this is another thing with the Stanford thing. We are being confusing because we every week in the beginning, we go, yeah, listen on Spotify, crush Stanford. And then inevitably halfway through, we're looking at some chart and you go, if you're listening, you got to come to YouTube and watch.
So do both.
Do both or...
You know what I do to juice the numbers? As soon as it comes out on Spotify, I hit play on my phone and then I mute it and I just let it play.
You're juicing our own numbers.
Oh, yeah, of course, man. Don't you got to. Every little listen counts. And then I did. Then I watch on YouTube, and I leave negative comments.
You leave
under
negative
burner accounts.
Yeah. Are you the one?
You
got to
balance out all the positivity. Speaking of negativity, you remember Charlie Munger?
Yeah, he came.
The billionaire
up.
Freak.
We were joking about him last week, and now he's
the
in the
ghoul?
News. He's this
he's
is
in the news,
this
yeah.
is very funny. He's
he fancies himself quote an amateur
architect.
Architect.
So he he left. He wanted to give some money to UC Santa Barbara for a dorm. I guess they are short on housing for students. And Charlie Munger said, "I know what I'll do. I'll draw them up a little mega dorm."
Yeah,
this thing is psychotic.
But they can only take my money if they let me design the dorm.
It's got to be exactly
house,
to his specifications.
Yeah, and it's going to house 4,500 plus students.
Yeah. So and it's crazy because I think. The next biggest dorm is at the Naval Academy, which is 4,000 students,
wow.
And it's multiple wings, and it's got like 25 entrances and exits, right? And this one's 4,500. It's all like one wing, and it's got two entrances.
It's got two entrances?
Yeah. But that's
not
even the worst part. The worst part is that everyone's pissed because it's something crazy, like 94% of the
bedrooms
don't have windows.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, it's going to entice them to come out and socialize. And so the
come out into the common areas where there are
right.
windows to socialize, right?
But so the lead architect, or not the lead architect, I think he serves on like the design board or something. He resigned over it. And he was like, I won't take part in this social and psychological experiment.
Probably
on
very
the,
smart of him. You know, I'm sure that there's going to be all kinds of issues when that someone smoking a joint and sets the whole thing up. And God forbid.
Right.
That's not going to happen. But God, Charlie Munger, you had your whole life. And
there's
you're
actually,
a billionaire.
If we can go to the article real quick, there's an insane quote
from Munger himself?
Yeah. It's actually like, Munger dismissed criticism about the amount of influence billionaires have on projects like the Megadorm, telling Market Watch that he'd rather be a billionaire and not be loved by everybody than not have any money.
All right. Now you're speaking my language,
yeah.
Charlie. Yeah, you're right. I'd rather be a billionaire and not be loved by everybody than not have any money.
Yeah.
Because so, what is love worth? Can you go to the bank with love?
Nothing.
Nothing. It's worth nothing. Now it's time for a little segment we call the Crypto Corner.
Crypto Corner.
That's,
I don't know if we had a theme song for it yet, but that's pretty good.
Did you hear about this Squid Game coin?
I did. I bought big.
You bought big in the Squid Game coin? Yeah. Oh man, what a disaster. Okay, so this thing, Squid Game coin, it's a piece of garbage. What do they call them?
Oh, junk? No.
Shit.
Scam? No. Shitcoin.
Yeah, yes, thank you. This thing started at 1:35 a.m. It was $38. An hour later, it was $90. An hour later, it was $93. Next hour, it jumps to $434. The next hour, $2,800 per coin. And then 5 minutes later, in 5 minutes, it went from $2,856.64 to 0.00079. It just, in a flash, just went to zero. Just the rug fully pulled.
So how does that happen in 5 minutes? Does
I have
that
no
just
idea.
Mean it's like clearly some group of people scamming and they just dumped right as
my
it
assumption
out.
Is that the creators of the coin just absolutely liquidated every last coin that they held, and the bid was probably propped up artificially by another wallet or something, and when they got what they came for, they did it. We got a great video of this guy who was like live trading as it happened. We'll play for you here.
So the market cap is $2.168 trillion. $1. And now the mark. Oh! Oh! It went to zero! Yeah! So the mark.
I just love that candle. It's that huge, huge green candle going up. And then in a second, just one.
Yeah, because it happens so quick.
It happens so fast. So what have we learned here, Emil?
Don't buy shitcoin.
Don't do that. Yeah.
Also, I mean, so if you click the link, it's like, I was reading the BBC article and it's like, it's
Squid Game crypto.
Like, it makes it sound a bit like Squid Game cryptocurrency rockets in first few days of trading. And then like when you scroll down, it's like, you know, they're just kind of talking about it as it's like, gamers have created an online version of the program for which you need Squid cryptocurrency to play. And it's like,
this is one of the pitfalls of.
Right. Because they don't really know.
Yeah, because I mean,
they're like, this is a fun little story. And then yeah. People are like, yeah, let me get into fucking shitcoin.
Yeah. And it's all, I mean, this is one of the things you got to be careful about and try to exercise some kind of critical thinking skills. And as soon as you start to feel yourself get that greed, that FOMO, it's probably wise to not do anything about it and like literally sit on your hands if you need to. Because, yeah, watching it go from $30 to $2,800, I'm sure there were plenty of times where you probably would have been pulling out your hair, but oh boy, to have the rug pulled out from you like that.
I mean, whoever, the guy who held to 2,800.
Wait, there was a guy who did that?
No, because when they started selling at 2,800.
Oh, right.
It went up to 400. I would have fucking sold then. I mean, this guy's.
Yeah, the hardest part in trading is selling. The two hardest things in my experience are selling and cutting your losses. Which is going to be something that I'm going to dive into next. But just speaking of Squid Coin, Squid Game Coin, Netflix just launched, they're finally doing the games thing. And they just launched, it's only for adult accounts, it's only on Android and only on mobile, and there's only 5 games. But you got to start somewhere. Too bad I don't have an Android because I'm not a freaking loser. I mean, come on,
no,
the green text
Android
bubbles? What am I trying not to get laid? Jeez Louise.
Oh, come on. Don't do our Android listeners like that.
Yeah, we love you guys. Beep boop at the Android. I don't know what the hell. Ethereum and Solana hit all-time highs. Bitcoin's like nearing all-time highs.
We're proud of you.
Everything's nuts. Everything is at all-time highs.
Everything is nuts.
It's truly insane. I mean, everywhere you look, there's signs of a bubble. But I mean, that can go on. You're looking?
I'm seeing the signs.
What are the signs?
The bubbles.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Man.
Everywhere.
You got to go to the doctor if you're seeing bubbles. let's see. Oh, that Shiba Inu wallet had some movement. The guy who bought, the person who had like $5 billion worth of Shiba moved like $2 billion worth around into other wallets. So they're out there.
They're not locked out.
They have the money. And it's insane. And I hope they give me some.
What does that mean for Shiba Inu?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I was reading a lot of theories that it's like, oh, it's they're trying to make it look like there's a whole bunch of supply to try to make the price drop. I don't know. All this stuff is a crapshoot.
Right.
Wanted to go over some of my trades for this week. I had some good trades that I'm proud of.
You had some good ones.
Yeah, I had some good ones. And there's some lessons. The first one, I played some GameStop call options. The 200 strike. So let's go over that real fast. What does that mean? The 200 strike call option. Come on. The 200 strike. Are you just going to look at me, man? That means that I bought the 200s, meaning I want it to go at least to 200.
Okay.
And the premium that I paid for it was, what was it? Like, I don't know, three. Can we go back to that real fast? I don't even remember what the hell I paid for. I paid $4.76. I sold some at $9.65 and then some more at $13.40. A really like.
So you bought these at $4.76?
Yeah. So technically, if I want to break even, that means I need it to go to $204.76.
Right.
The price of the premium that I paid plus the strike price equals the break even point.
And then after that, you can start making some money.
And then after that. But if I
damn,
bought.
So you held till 9.
Yeah, but I did that on like Monday. Excuse me.
And it expires on Friday.
Yeah. So the more time you've got, like the sooner it makes a move, the more your premium is going to get juiced. So we've got a chart here. And Spotify listeners, we're going to work on something where we can link out to like charts. But there's some good lessons here in this chart. So the first thing I want to call attention to is the higher lows. You see, I pointed that out at the bottom. There was the set of higher lows in August and then again in October. Like, that's a sign that something's kind of building, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Are you putting these...
I put those lines in there. Yeah, those black lines to show, all right, it put in a higher low. That shows that there's not being lower lows.
Right.
Lower lows would be bad. It means the downtrend is happening. But this higher low, this set of higher lows, and then it goes, you see that one big pop day right in the middle there? And all the price action thereafter has stayed in the body of that one big candle. Do you see what I'm talking about?
Right. Where the two lines meet, you got this huge candle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In toward the end of like August 23rd. So that shows the price is like consolidating and you can draw a trend line from the top of that all the way down. And then right in there, you've got the price making that higher low and bouncing off of the 200-day moving average. The 200-day moving average is kind of like the long-term trend indicator that pretty much everybody uses that shows like, all right, if it's up, the trend overall is up in the long term. And if the price gets down there, you're going to want to see it hold above the 200-day. So we had that. And just above it was two things. The 50-day moving average, which is the blue line. And then you had that trend line right there. So when it started to pop above that, you see I wrote broke through the near-term trend line in the 50-day?
Yeah, the blue
That's
line.
When I bought. It was at like 195. That's when I bought those $200 calls. Because I'm looking up and I'm like, all right, they were like $4. I'll play.
I'll play.
And then the next day, they popped. I sold them because the stock went above 200. The calls went up like they were a triple. So I just took my money and I ran. And that's it. I was in and out in a day. And yeah, if I had held on one more day, they would have gone up to like $50-$60 per. And so I would have made more.
Explain what you mean by the higher lows real quick.
The higher lows, the price per share didn't continue to make new lows. If it kept going down, that would be bad. That would show that the trend is continuing downward. The stock is going to start breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's putting in a, it puts in a low and then it puts in another low, but it's higher than the previous one.
Right.
And then the next low is a higher one than that. And it's just kind of like stair stepping upward and condensing into that channel. That takes a long time to set up. I mean, that was like 3 months. And that's where like waiting really comes into play because there wouldn't have
been. How long were you watching this? Were you watching?
I wasn't.
This,
like, I just saw people starting to talk about it, and that was another thing. Like, oh, GameStop is kind of setting up, and that's what people were referring to. A lot of people saw that same setup.
Right.
So there was, and Bed Bath & Beyond had just reported earnings, I think, and they shot up like 93% in a day. And Bed Bath & Beyond is in that same basket of stocks that did really well around the GameStop time. It was GameStop, AMC, Bed Bath & Beyond, BlackBerry. So like when one kind of starts to move, they all can kind of move in tandem. So there was that one.
So you're not actually paying attention to GameStop anymore.
No, you just heard like I was just in it for a quick trade.
Wait, but
in and
so
out. What?
If you look at that candle with the yellow at the end,
mm-hmm.
did it shoot all the way up to?
It shot, that's good. Yeah, it shot all the way up to just under 260.
So you left some money on the table.
I did. I left some money on the table. But I'm okay with that on a stock like this where it's... You don't know what you're going to get. I left a few grand on the table. Nothing compared to... So I've got another chart here for Overstock, which is symbol OSTK. This one has a very similar kind of setup. Look how long this one took to set up. This is what I'm talking about with patience. And you can see...
Oh, yeah. We're going all the way back. What is that?
Yeah, that's
July?
August of 2020.
Yeah.
That high was put in. And then the next highest high was just a little bit lower in February of this year. And then it tried again, and it just was setting up. You see the series of higher lows?
I mean, this is such
the
a big
low from the beginning of this year.
So this bottom line.
Yeah, I put in these lines to show that. And when the stock starts to kind of get in this range, this narrowing range.
Right. It's kind of easier to see what you're talking about on this one, right? Because it's not dipping quite as low as it was previously in like December and November.
And especially if you look toward, we can't zoom in, but if you look toward this last August, that's a good chunk of higher lows. Just like the low, a newer one that's higher, a newer one that's even higher. And the price is getting into this channel. And then look what happens when it finally busts above. So I played some of those options. I didn't write them down for this, but I played like the 95 strike and the 100 strike for nice little profits. And this one took a long time. And
how much
this
are we
is
talking?
A couple thousand bucks. But this is what I'm talking about, where you wait for the fat pitch. Like this was a nice big fat pitch, a nice big meatball. And this time, instead of a wet noodle, baby, I had a big old bat, and I just went.
You were like Babe Ruth with like three different bats.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Calling your shot.
So this is a great chart lesson here. I mean, this is a nice bread and butter kind of setup that anyone can see, you know. But it can take time for it to set up, because like back in July, you could have said the same thing, but then it was a fake out, and it started to break above, but then went back down, and it had to set up again for another few months. The next one was, this is tragic for me. So, what's the name of the company? The rental car.
Avis. Yeah.
It shot up this week by over 100%. I don't know why. I don't know what happened, but, the ticker symbol is fun. It's CAR, C-A-R.
Maybe someone's got some info that they're going to do a little Hertz deal.
Never know.
Yeah.
I had 2,000 shares of this stock. In March of 2020, I sold them for $9.
How much did you buy them for?
56 cents. I bought them for like $8 and change. I made like $2,500 on the trade. 2,000 shares.
Okay.
It hit a high of like $550.
Wow, and you bought it
this week. Yeah, and I had 2,000 shares. The profits I would have had on this thing is somewhere north of like $650,000. I don't even remember. $700,000 I would have made.
Holy shit. Guys, give him a second.
That's a hard one. So there's the chart. And you can see that just really hurts.
See, but this is when I see this stuff, this reminds me, like, I've gambled a little bit and only lost, and now I completely stay away from it. And it's like, this is truly the feel. Like, when we had the guy, we played the TikTok of the guy who was like, my Shiba would have been worth.
My Shiba coin
like,
would have been worth $1 billion.
Right, billions, whatever.
Yeah.
It's these losses where you go, oh, you just need this one thing to happen. Like, who knows how long you would have held on. So, like.
Yeah, I probably would have sold at I would have sold at $100
right.
or something. Probably, because why would I hold
but
on?
But you have again, the feeling that you lost out on yes. 700K.
Yeah.
Which is like.
So nice.
Right, but.
Because it was in my retirement account too. It would have been tax-free.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, if I live to 70 or whenever I can touch it, but.
That's not going to happen.
So there was one idiot, absolute moron on Reddit. He posted on Wall Street Bets. He shorted this stock into maybe it was earnings. I guess it was earnings.
Can you give a brief short? I've seen some comments asking
what shorting is.
Can you give a brief?
All right. So there's essentially when you're doing stocks, you're either long, which means you think it's going to go up, or you're short, which means you think it's going to go down. And when you're long, there's two sides of the trade. You buy it and then you sell it, right? The buying is the opening part of the trade, and the selling is the closing. It's one half of the circle. You got to buy it, and then you got to sell it.
Right.
Shorting is just the opposite. You got to sell it, and then you got to buy it. You sell it to start the trade. You buy it to close it. And I will use pudding again to exemplify this. Let's say I go over to your house, right?
Yeah.
And you got a fridge stocked full of pudding.
Mm-hmm.
You're a fiend, man. You got so much pudding, you don't know what to do with it.
Right.
Word spreads on the street, and there's people outside, and they're clamoring.
They're
going, we want pudding. Share the pudding, Emil. You selfish.
Fuck you, freeloaders.
Yeah. Well, I see that, and I'm like, man, Emil, you got to sell some of this pudding. And you're like, mind your own business, Ben.
Yeah.
And I go, all right, I'm going to borrow some of this pudding out of your fridge, and I'm going to sell it to people because the price is going up. It's like $10 a pack, and I know that it's only worth like $5. So I'm going to borrow some from your fridge, and I'm going to sell it to people because I see an opportunity here. People are snatching it up. They're going absolutely
dummy for pudding.
They're buying up the pudding, and then lo and behold, the next day the price drops to $5. Score. There's a problem though. I got to restock your fridge, right?
Yeah, you better.
Because I borrowed your pudding. I got to close the trade. I got to buy the pudding back. So I go to the store and I buy just as much pudding as I just sold at $5 per pack, and I put it back in your fridge. You're happy, I'm happy, because I just collected the difference.
Right, you collected $5. That extra $5 on the pudding.
people talk trash about shorting, but it is kind of an essential part of a functioning market, because if you think a stock is going to go up, you can participate, right? You buy it and it goes up. There has to be a mechanism for to participating if you think a stock's going to go down just as well. It's just like the opposite. You're selling something that you, when you're long, you're buying something that you don't yet own. You buy it and then you own it. When you're short, you're selling something that you don't yet own, and then you buy it back to close out the trade. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just, I mean, people get caught up on the mechanism of it. Like, how do you borrow something that isn't yours? It's like, don't worry about that. The thing that you got to understand is you're selling it first and then buying it back. The risk is, what if that price of pudding shot to 100 or 200
right.
or 300?
So you take my pudding and you start selling it out.
Have to replenish your fridge.
Right. So this can be pretty dangerous.
Yes, because again, if people start going crazy worldwide and it shoots to 200, right, I still have to buy it back. So your losses are potentially unlimited.
If you make good on your short, no problem, because you just buy it back at a short, right, at a lower price.
So this dork, this huge idiot, shorted car. They borrowed shares that...
Car is the ticker for AIDS.
Yeah, car is the ticker. And this guy, his net loss is just under $170,000. His net account value is negative $43,000. So I believe he owes his broker $43,000 because it went higher. It went over 100%. So that's the danger of shorting. He's down over 100%. He didn't hedge at all. So now here's a pop quiz. If you were short car, Emil, how might you use options to hedge yourself? What would you buy?
Puts.
No, you would buy calls, correct.
Fuck!
It's okay.
I had a 50-50 shot, and that's what hurts the most.
It's okay. So, like, if you were long car into earnings, what would you buy to hedge yourself?
But wait, I thought puts are the ones that can help you hedge your bets.
Yeah, I mean, calls and puts can hedge. Oh. You can hedge either way, depending on the direction you're betting in. If you're betting it's going to go down, you would hedge yourself against upside by buying calls because you would be participating in the upside at least, right?
Yeah. No, this sucks. People are going to see this.
So that this guy though lost this much money. I think he said, what does the title of it say? I lost my car short into earnings, life savings and some gone. Please, please, if you're out there and you're just getting into trading and you...
What is he just going to have like a fucking debt collector after him forever?
I don't know. I think TD Ameritrade, which is his broker, will probably, I don't know, garnish his wages. I don't know how they do this.
Sucks.
But don't ever do something like that. Don't put all of your eggs in one basket like that. You are not savvy and sophisticated enough to do trades like this. And this...
Wall Street Bets is a dark place.
It really is.
The top comment, the guy says, damn it, 2 days into No Nut November and you show me with this? Guess I'll try again next year. Does that mean he's jerking off to it?
Yeah, he's happy. He's on Cody mode and is excited by someone else's loss. But
Jesus,
this doesn't make me feel good.
No,
like,
that's terrible.
This one sucks. Like, don't, for the love of God, don't do that. And even if you are in a position where you really believe in something, hedge yourself. Buy some calls if you're short. Buy some puts if you're long. Do something. But man, I hope this person's okay. I hope they're not, you know, get on to better health. Betterhealth.com/Trill. You're going to need to use that code, man, to save as much. BetterHelp?
BetterHelp.
You're going to need to go on, this guy's going to need to go on BetterHelp.com/Trill. Use that promo code to get a discount, much needed discount. I had another trade that I was really happy with that I got filled on last week. Didn't realize it.
You got filled on?
Yeah, I put in a bid. So when you do an options trade, just standard options trade, you do a buy to open. You remember I talked about
BTO.
You know, half of the trade is opening and closing. Mm-hmm. In options, I'm buying to open the position, and then you sell to close it.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what, when I wrote BTO up there, I bought to open two of the November 19th, so 2 weeks out, 900 strike calls on this MSTR for $10.50. So that's just a little over $2,100.
What's MSTR? Is that the
MSTR is called MicroStrategy. Mm. They are just, They were a boring company from like the 90s, and they decided to pivot exclusively to Bitcoin. They just used all their cash to just buy Bitcoin, and the stock is
good
up
for them.
Yeah, a ton. And the CEO is like this crazy laser eyes dude. But I've forgotten that I had this, and then MicroStrategy shot up, and I sold. I ended up selling the other one today, but I sold one call for $35, the other one for $30, which was nice. But it's got a similar little lesson here. You got higher lows.
Much higher lows. Look at those fucking
much higher lows. Look at where it is. It's above both the 200 and the 50-day moving average. It shot up, and then it kind of like consolidated into that little channel. And Friday last week when it was around 725, that's when I bought the 900 strike calls. Now, obviously, I'm aiming really far ahead. I'm aiming for like a 150-point move. But I don't need that whole move to happen because, A, I have time. I have 2 weeks.
What did you buy it at?
I bought the 900 strike calls.
Okay.
So it didn't even come close. It shot up to 850 on Monday. But that was enough to juice those calls enough because, you know, they all kind of moved together. Mm-hmm. And that big move, and it was on volume, too. There was, you see down at the bottom, that big black candle. That was enough to kind of really juice it. So it was a good trade. I'm happy with myself
hey,
this
good
week.
For you, man.
Had a lot of good trades.
Don't worry about that.
But I'm also
grand.
Angry.
Don't worry about the 700 grand. You left it on
well,
the
well, this
table.
Week, I left like 40 grand on the table this week, man. Amazon, I had a bunch of, I traded Amazon, I traded Google, I traded Shopify. I won't go into detail on those because it's just too much. But as of this morning, I would be up another 40 grand, which
you
is
know,
just, that's, so that's, there's, sorry, I'm talking so much today, man.
It's all right.
Sorry, everybody.
You know who didn't leave any money on the table?
Who?
Elon Musk.
Wait, real fast, before we get into Elon, this is a problem that I have. I have a real big issue with like letting go of what could have been.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking. This is the like gambler mindset. It's
yeah.
Like,
and it's for me, it's not even the gambler mindset. It's just like, oh, you're going to have in your trading career for those out there who are intrepid, young, money-hungry gamblers. Take it from me. Don't let these things become, you know, brain worms because they will eat you alive. Like, yeah, it's so painful to look at like, oh my God, I would have had another 40 grand this week. But it's like, I did well otherwise. I don't know. It's hard to let go of. What about Elon Musk?
No, I'm glad you fucking spoiled my great segue to go back to say that. No, I'm glad. No, that seemed
sorry.
That seemed truly worth
sorry
it.
Sorry about that. I'll shut up.
I had a killer segue, and then he was like, no, let me go back for a second.
So what about Elon Musk?
Oh, boy.
How much wealthier is he this week?
I don't know if on the week, but I think...
As of Monday.
On the Monday, he yeah. went up... Another 24
billion dollars.
You know those guys who say bill or mill instead yeah. of...
Oh, they're so cool.
That's when I'm like, okay, this guy knows money.
Oh, man. Yeah, what's up another
no,
24
dude, it was
bill?
Like bill. It was like a bill, I think. Yeah. On the table.
Man, can you imagine having a bill?
Yeah.
And then I mean, having a mill would be sick.
Yeah, that's
and it
what
is?
I know. This guy fucking knows finance.
Yeah, he's got
this
a bill.
This guy knows money.
Nice Patagonia vest.
Oh, the guy.
Not you, the guy, yeah.
But I was doing such a good impression, you saw a Patagonia vest.
Yeah, I could just see it. I visualized it.
Yeah. Yeah, so Elon's doing great still. You kind of had a fun little lesson with this one.
Yeah, this was another fun lesson.
You were telling me a funny rule.
I have what's called the uncle rule that I made up for myself because my uncle trades exclusively on his phone. He used to just call a broker and pay like $80 per trade commission. And they totally took advantage of him. They could have told him at any point, hey, you know, you don't have to call us like this. And it's the modern era. Like, you can just do it online. But he's like...
Old guys, man. They don't...
Yeah.
My dad still, he just like refuses to use his credit card. It's just like...
Really?
Cash and we'll be out and he'll be like...
Points that man is missing out on.
He'll be like, I need an ATM. It's like, for what?
Yeah, for cash.
You know, they have... And then, but he thinks they're going to like steal his info or something and he's going to get...
Babu, you gotta, I mean, take the risk.
I think.
Someone can rob you of your cash, and then you got nothing.
Yeah, he can stave him off, though.
Well, the uncle rule is that whenever my uncle texts me excitedly about a stock, I know it's probably done in the near term. And that's kind of what happened with Tesla. We got the chart pulled up here. So that candle that I pointed to was Monday's action. And it was like kind of a blow off top. And at the very top up there, this is one of the indicators that I use. Some people had asked me about what chart indicators I use. And chart indicators, for those of you who don't know, are just like different people have invented different what they call indicators, where it's like moving averages are a sort of indicator. They're very basic. It's just the average of the price over the last 50 days or 10 days or 200 or 8 or whatever you want to choose. And there's dozens of them, and they all tell you different things for whatever, momentum. But I keep it really basic. And one of those is the RSI, which is called the Relative Strength Index. And generally speaking, above 70, it's starting to kind of run hot. Below 30, you're probably looking at a near-term bottom. And Tesla, as you can see, has been running hot above 70 for a long time, several weeks, and topped out, almost maxed out the RSI's capabilities. That combined with my uncle's greedy, greedy text saying, I just bought, you know, 20 shares. And I'm like, when? He's like, today. I was like, okay. This is like, because he waits. He's like, oh, I don't know if I should buy. I don't know if I should buy. And then he finally capitulates. And he's like representative of the crowd.
We should start a Twitter account that like tweets out as soon as your uncle texts you about a stock. And we can be like, Ben's uncle just texted about Tesla. Get out.
He's done well for himself, though. And, you know, credit to him. He keeps it very simple also. But so it was just a really quick trade. This was one where I bought put options for this week. And I bought them just like toward the end of the day. I bought some of the 1130 strike, 1120 and 1100. And I made.
What was it at when you bought them?
It was at just about 1200.
Wow.
So I needed a pretty precipitous drop to happen very fast.
And your uncle came right in.
And that's what happened. It gapped down. Gapped down meaning it opened significantly lower than the previous day's close. A gap up would be the opposite, where it opens significantly higher than the previous day's close. So it gapped down and then it dropped. Intraday, it was down to like, I don't know, it was down like 80 points or something. But again, it was enough to juice those puts. I sold them in the first 5 minutes of trading.
I got some puts you can juice.
Excuse me?
Nothing. Forget it.
So that was a nice trade. This is all just bragging for me this week.
Ben's doing great, everybody. We also had a, Ezra be tweeting. No, Ezra? What's his name? Elon.
Ezra?
I just had a stroke. Huh? I'm sorry about that. Elon be tweeting.
Oh, he always be tweeting.
He always be tweeting. And he says, so apparently there was like, I mean, also these get so annoying. Every time they talk about people's wealth, they like start breaking it down and they're like, if you took just a portion of Jeff Bezos' wealth, you could clothe every poor person in the world. And it's like, what does that even mean? But so apparently there was a headline going around about Elon Musk's new wealth and how it could have been solved. He could solve world hunger with just 2% of his wealth. Mm-hmm. And Elon fired back at, I think it's the United Nations World Food Program. And he said, if WFP can describe on this Twitter thread exactly how $6 billion will solve world hunger, I will sell Tesla stock right now and do it.
Fair enough. Okay. Maybe you see that getting tossed.
I think there's more to the thread. I think he started engaging the guy, but then I think Elon left him on red at the end.
Yeah, the WFP chief said that, right there, if you go to show replies, right below this David Beasley, the 8.4 billion.
Oh, yeah. The 8.4 billion you referred to covers what we needed to reach 115 people in 2020 with food assistance. We need 6 billion plus now on top of our existing funding requirements due to blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Elon, that's exactly what we're looking for is blah, blah, blah. World hunger, blah, blah, blah.
We're no great fans of Elon, but we are rooting for him to solve world hunger.
Yeah, do it, man. I dare you. Give me $1 million.
I will never... I mean, also, it's not. This is not a new thing for him. This kind of reeks of...
condescension?
No. I mean, he's done this. Remember with the like the Thai boys trapped in the cave.
Oh, yeah.
He
oh,
was like yeah. going to give them a submarine, and it was just...
I mean, he's such an egomaniac. He's got to insert himself into the center of any giant yeah. conversation. Bitcoin, the Thai kids.
And then he... yeah,
those two things.
I'd have to reread. He ended up calling the guy a pedophile for some reason. I don't
remember.
That
was his. The guy was like, "With all due respect, sir, we appreciate your help, but you don't know what's going on." Like, his idea was for these like long tubes to put the children in, and the guy was like, "We can't do that because of the nature, the way the cave is structured."
And then he said, "Oh,
you sound like a pedo guy." Such a dork.
He did it with the ventilators too during the pandemic.
Oh yeah,
he promised ventilators, and I think he gave people a bunch of sleep apnea machines.
He did.
They were like CPAP and BiPAP machines, and he said he was going to deliver. He like was crying to Gavin Newsom. He was like, "You got to correct the story. They're saying I didn't." And then these hospitals were like, "He gave us." He's like, "Thank you for the sleep apnea machines. They're not ventilators."
Yeah, I guess we'll wait for people with snoring problems to come in. He's
but
just
look,
a giant weenie.
I hope he...
Come on the show, Elon Musk. This is a challenge. Come on the show, give me $10 million, and I will turn it into $100 million. And then I'll keep it.
I hope
and
he...
I'll donate like a good chunk of it. 50% of the profits will go to my mom.
I am rooting for him, though. I hope he solves world hunger.
Yeah, you can't not root for someone in that position to like get us off this... planet, but also come on, focus on earth son.
But so this brings us back to, you know, people have been asking, we touched on it a little bit, but why Tesla is valued so fucking high, because it is weird.
It's a whole story. I will try to condense it, but basically Tesla has had a lot of haters from the start, and a lot of doubters, and a lot of people who were short the stock, like billionaires, short the stock and always talking trash on it. And whenever you've got a high short interest, meaning short interest is how many shares are short, roughly speaking. So like with GameStop, there were a ton of shorts in it. The short interest was like sky high, over 100%. Meaning there's a lot of shares out there that eventually do have to get bought back to close the short position. Right?
Right.
Same thing with Tesla. You got, say, 40% of the shares are short. Those are out there. And you know that, hey, if some buying pressure starts to build and the stock starts to break out and go up, those shorts are screwed. And they have to buy back the stock, or they have to deposit more money into their accounts to like compensate for the losses that they are accruing. Because after 100%, your broker is going to start incurring the loss, which is what happened to the guy on Car. He lost more than he had. The broker then takes the fall. So with Tesla, it's a big combination of things. It's valued at over $1 trillion, simply put, because people keep buying the stock. And that's due
to... Because they think it's going to go up.
Because they think it's worth... More a trap that a lot of people fall into is thinking, oh, Tesla's just a car company and they're valued at like way more than all the other car companies combined. But that's true. And it's more than they're currently making and more than the assets on their books and more than the cash. It's like on paper, they are incredibly overvalued. But you got to remember that the market is forward looking and you have to like, you have to realize that people aren't thinking about them as just a car company. They're thinking about them. They're basing their purchases on future expectations for what the company is going to do 5, 10, 15 years into the future. So that future potential value around electricity storage, their battery tech, renewable energy,
right,
the AI robo-taxis, like they're all being factored in. And it's stuff that you can't really value, right?
Right.
I mean, you can kind of throw out guesstimations of like robo-taxis are $3 trillion industry. But, and this is something that I wanted to cover last week, what you have repeatedly with Tesla and has happened multiple times is you have a combination of short squeezes and then what are called gamma squeezes. Gamma squeeze has to do with options. The basic thing is that there's such a buying frenzy of call options. I'm talking hundreds of thousands of call options.
On Tesla.
And think about it. If you are on the other side of that trade and you are writing those call options, what do you got to do to hedge yourself?
Pump up Tesla.
Well, you have to buy the stock, yeah. right? Because each contract is worth 100 shares, represents 100 shares. And if you were talking millions of call contracts, that's a lot of Tesla stock that has to get bought
right.
to cover for those call contracts. And that's something that's been happening. I mean, that happened in GameStop. That happened in like AMC. It's like, it's almost like a secret cheat code that people have collectively started to wake up to, that the options market can really cause some exciting moves in stocks. And Tesla's one of them, where it's just like buying begets more buying. And it just, there's this perfect storm of good news and the chart setup and options buying and short squeezes. And it's just, it's never ending.
So the valuation is based on a ton of things.
A ton of things, yeah.
Future value, their own, everything they have going on. It's not just
right.
the cars they're putting out into the world.
Yeah, and don't get cute and think.
And then the market also has its own little weird effects on
yeah.
its valuation.
There are so many different ways to value a stock, right? People use price to earnings ratios, which are called PE ratios. They use market cap. They use price to sales. There's so many different ways. It's all kind of subjective. There's entire books written about this subject. Like, it's kind of, you just kind of like pick one that works for you. So there were a couple people that asked what I look for. First of all, I'm not any kind of expert, but there's one stock that, so one thing that I do, if I'm trying to value a stock, I simply Google the following. I Google the ticker symbol plus the phrase key statistics. And that takes you to a Yahoo Finance page. It's very basic, but it shows you, and I don't know how accurate this information is on Yahoo Finance, but a lot of people use it. There's other websites. There's Google Finance. There's one called FinViz that people use that tells you stuff. But what I look for is very basic. I first, when we pull up the page here, you see on the left, the current market cap, which is how much the company's valued at, right?
Right.
And this is a really big heartbreaker for me. It's a company called InMode. The ticker symbol is INMD. They make cosmetic surgery robots and stuff for all sorts of things, like pulling your skin tight and freezing fat and Botox, all sorts of stuff.
Damn, it looks like they're growing like crazy.
Oh, huh? They are growing like crazy. I owned 5,000 shares of this last year at like $15. I sold them at like 18. Shot all the way to like 100 and I don't remember, 180 this year.
For listeners only, if you can see the chart. So back in September of 2020, they were valued at 1.19 billion. And then they were slowly creeping up. 2021, 2.7 billion.
Gone up like
June, and now they're at
it's 7.47 billion since I bought it.
Wow.
And my 5,000 shares, they did a 2-for-1 split. So now I have I would have had twice as many shares, but the price gets cut in half. This one I left, I think I would have made like 850 grand in profit on this.
Damn.
So every day I see this thing and I just want to cry because I was right. I mean, it's kind of like hindsight. It's kind of confirmation bias because I don't know if the things that I saw in it are the reason why it was undervalued. But anyway, so first I look at the market cap and at the time it was about $1 billion, maybe less than a billion. And if you scroll down, it shows you all of these things. And what I look for here is on the left, you got profit margin and they've got great margins, 46% margins. That's really good. You want to look for all positive things. Return on assets, I don't really pay attention to. Revenue was a huge one that I saw. Their revenues are $322 million. I think this is annual. Their quarterly revenue growth, 57% year over year. That's huge. They're profitable. They've got cash on their balance sheet. That's another thing that I look for. They have virtually no debt. They've got $387 million in cash, only $3.5 million in debt. And then if you scroll up, back up just a little bit, I then look to the right here and I just see the percentage of shares held by insiders and institutions. I like to see high institutional ownership. I like to see, to a lesser extent, high insider ownership. Because that shows you that you're not alone and that other people see the value in it.
Right.
And I saw this combination of things. Low market cap, high quarterly growth, solid revenues, solid amount of cash, low debt, high institutional ownership, high insider ownership. The chart was like set up and it's in an industry where I'm like, people are getting cosmetic procedures done all the time, and they're like super low touch, non-invasive things. It was a no-brainer. And at the time, I kind of felt like, well, what am I missing? Because like, if it was that great, it should be worth more than this, right? And that was a stupid F-up on my part, because I doubted myself. And a lot of what I do is doubt myself. And I had a gym, and it's one worth watching. Keep your eye on it, because this is one that's now in an unrelenting uptrend, and it's probably worth buying on dips. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's what I look for. I look at those things. You want to look at growth. You want to look at debt, how much revenue they've got, just the basics.
And that leads us into, we thought it'd be fun to talk about an IPO for a little bit, because we've yes. never talked about this, and there's, and this one might be fun for the audience because it could be happening imminently, the Rivian IPO.
Rivian, which is?
It's the new, not that new. I mean, it's been around for a while, but everyone's talking about it now because they're ready to launch. It's a new electric vehicle.
Trucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're Tesla-esque in that they, it's all going to be, there's not going to be dealerships. It's going to be the same thing where you go directly to Rivian.
Right.
And another thing is they're, you know, one of the biggest draws for Tesla is their charging network. They probably have by far the best charging network for any electric vehicle. And so that helps them. You know how many people drive Teslas out of electric vehicles?
90%.
Wow. Okay. That's higher than I thought, but it's a lot. It's, I think last year for all the,
like the market share of Teslas in the electric car mm-hmm. vertical, what is it?
Last year for all the registered electric vehicles, it was 79%.
That's substantial.
Yeah.
That's a lot higher than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah. And I mean, they're expensive cars.
Yeah.
But Rivian is also building out its own charging network. Because I think if you're not on Tesla, it's like mostly these weird third-party chargers.
Yeah, Blink is one.
Ionic or something.
Yeah.
But so Rivian is, they're going to, I think they're hoping by 2023 they'll have, and they've got, you know how Tesla has the supercharger?
Mm-hmm.
I think they've got their own little version of that. It's like the Rivian Adventure Network. And it's...
The RAN.
Exactly. And so they want to have like 6,000 of these chargers in something like, I don't know, I'm going to get it wrong. It's either like 3,500 and 6,600 locations. I mean, I don't
think
that's
ambitious.
I mean, yeah, they still won't. And then it'll be like 10,000 waypoints, which is like, it won't be as fast charging, but it'll still be faster than standard charging. So it'll
all
be
things that you need as a company, as an electric car company, to overcome the range anxiety
right.
that electric car prospective electric car owners have.
This is one of the biggest barriers to getting people onto the electric vehicle. Everyone, and I think it's not just the U.S. It's Europe is having these problems too.
Yeah.
And I mean that's, you know. Because I wish, so right now, I think you can only use the supercharger network if you have a Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, they have different, everyone has to use the same plugs and stuff. And in America, Tesla has...
In Europe, they have the Royale with cheese.
Exactly. Tesla has a proprietary charger
yeah,
here.
Much like the iPhone, right?
Right. Yeah. They're like the Apple of electric cars.
Oh, that is so annoying. Get over
right.
yourself.
So, but... It doesn't matter. Tesla does the same thing in Europe because they can use software to block people from charging on their network. So I think Rivian is using the standard like CCS charger or whatever it is. But I think initially they said the RAN network will only be for Rivian drivers. So right, it is a bit of a bummer that they're kind of creating this like patchwork of weird.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to be taking up more space than gas stations. If every car company is going to have their own damn proprietary charger.
I think they're going to open. Tesla is right now doing a pilot program in Europe where they're allowing people to charge their electric cars at Tesla stations.
Gotcha.
And I think he said he wants to bring it to the States. So, and I think like Rivian said, they're only doing that initially. I mean, it's tough because like that is one of their big selling points, right? The charging networks.
Yeah.
And they're doing a thing. They're like these adventure vehicles. They're kind of crazy. You should look at one of the videos. A lot of it is what they showed on the Cybertruck, the Tesla Cybertruck. They've got the same kind of camping capabilities, like a tent will pop out and you can get the attachment where there's like a stovetop coming out. So, and that's another thing. Like there's a, I think there's a Tesla Rivian. Look at them. They're pretty sick.
The R1T is the truck. The R1S is
the headlights are a little goofy.
Yeah, they're a little goofy.
But that's kind of the name of the game with electric vehicles. A lot of them look a little goofy.
Well, they're IPOing at a valuation of roughly $53 billion. They're trying to raise a little over $8 billion, which is, I want to say, the fourth largest raise in IPO history. Amazon owns 20% of them. Ford owns 5% of them. Their stated strategy is to build electric delivery vans.
For Amazon.
Yeah. And
so, like, it's a little bit of a Hertz situation where they, I think they have a, like, Amazon wants to build out their electric fleet. It's part of their push to go carbon neutral or whatever by 2035.
And they're developing a pickup and an SUV aimed at affluent people. So, sorry, poor people. It's going to be a while.
It'll be very, like, much like Tesla prices probably, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, like upwards of 50, 60 grand.
Yeah, and then when you start adding on all these packages and stuff.
Yeah.
But so, and it's in there, we can go through their SEC filing a little bit and...
Yeah, so Tesla's kind of getting pissed. Tesla's got a lawsuit against them?
Tesla's suing them. It started out as, so a lot of the people from Rivian used to work at Tesla, which is not that crazy in the car.
Cry me a river.
In the car industry, it's like a lot of people jump from different...
any industry.
But I think the problem is that you're dealing with pretty new tech and...
Yeah.
At first, it was just Tesla was suing, saying that Rivian is poaching his employees.
Yeah. Elon Musk was saying that.
Yeah. And Rivian was saying...
Too bad. So sad.
They were saying he's doing this to intimidate people to not let them leave. Right. So it was like a weird little battle, but now they've expanded the lawsuit to say that they are actually stealing
trade secrets,
tech.
He's probably going to just try to bury them in legal crap.
It's
which is unsurprising.
Yeah. I mean, so, but this is something they're listing in their filing.
Yeah, which is what we wanted to talk about next. So when a company IPOs, there were some people asking, so shout out to Larry. Hey, Larry, a friend of mine who was asking me, should I buy the Rivian IPO? First of all, I have no effing clue to anybody asking anything about buying anything. I don't know, man. But one thing that you can do is when a stock... is about to IPO, which stands for initial public offering. Initial, the first public offering. It's about to be offered to the public for the first time to buy the stock.
Right. And before that, it's just a private company.
It's just a private company.
So it's a private company. They're doing well and they want to be able to offer themselves up to the
market. Insiders, all the original angel investors and the private equity firms want to cash out. So,
But this can also help them build capital reinvest and,
And they want to... they want to raise money, which is what Rivian's doing. But what they do is it's kind of like a birth certificate for the stock. It's called an S-1. It is the filing that they put out there that kind of outlines the business plan and how they're going to use the proceeds from the raises. But there's one thing that you ought to look at when you open up. So if you want to check out, you can check out any stock that has... filed one of these, any public stock, it's out there indefinitely, but you just Google the stock and then S1. And so I recommend going and searching under the risk factors, and Rivian's risk factors is 50 pages. And it's really interesting. There's just like...
Because it depends on a lot of things.
Yeah, it depends on so much. So I'm just going to go through a couple of these. Each one of these then has an entire paragraph below it kind of going into detail. So we are a growth stage company with a history of losses and expect to incur significant expenses and continuing losses for the foreseeable future. Our limited operating history makes it difficult for us to evaluate our future business prospects. Okay. Our ability to develop and manufacture vehicles of sufficient quality and appeal to customers on schedule and on a large scale is unproven. Like, a lot of this is basically they're saying stuff that the lawyers kind of make them have to say. They have to account for any and all contingencies. around tech, IP. There was an interesting one that said, we might have customers who decide to modify their cars that are against our like recommendations, and that might, you know, someone might put something on it aftermarket and it causes it to blow up, and that could have adversely affect our stock. Like, they really touch on everything.
Don't they also have one about the CEO?
Yeah, there's one about the CEO.
I thought that one was pretty interesting because it...
Yeah, keep going here.
So they have a CEO, RJ Scaringe. I don't know how to say his name.
We are highly dependent on the services and reputation of Robert J. Scaringe, our founder and chief executive officer. If he were to discontinue his service due to death, disability, or any other reason, or if his reputation is adversely impacted by personal actions or omissions or other events within or outside his control, we would be significantly disadvantaged.
They make him seem almost Elon Musk-y, but I don't think I've...
Well, he's like this is his brainchild. He started it in 2009, I think.
I Googled him a little bit. He seems fairly normal.
All right, cool.
Vegan guy who likes to mountain bike and...
Yeah, of course he is. They talk about, they go on to, it's interesting. I suggest you all take a look. But it's worth paying attention to because there are cautionary tales. Facebook's IPO. Like, there are some IPOs that are successful right off the bat. Beyond Meat was a very successful
one. That's another one who I think they had a trade secrets lawsuit when they IPO'd, but it didn't affect them. So, I mean, it depends.
And that one was interesting because I think there was a bit of a short squeeze factor where it was hated from the start and it felt like it was a bloated valuation. But then to everyone's surprise and to the chagrin of shorts, it just rocketed from like, I don't know, 20, 30 bucks a share all the way to several hundred.
Damn.
And it was insane. But Facebook's was a very unsuccessful IPO because in their S-1 filing, in their risk factors, 11 days before they went public, they amended it to include this little thing. And they basically said, oh, hey, by the way, we're slashing our revenue projections because this was like 2013, mm-hmm. 2011, 2012, whenever they went public. We're slashing our revenue projections because more and more of our users are flocking to mobile, the app, instead of desktop and, you know, online. And we haven't yet monetized mobile. So our numbers are going to get affected. So it was this whole thing where all these analysts had to like revise their projections. And it was just this chaos. And there was a lawsuit that they were involved in that they also hadn't really discussed. But it was interesting because it IPO'd at like, I don't know, 40 bucks or something like that. It eventually dropped all the way down to the teens because their mobile, which is insane to think about all this time later. Their mobile revenues were zero. They made exactly no money off of their Facebook app. It's insane to think about now, right? And then I distinctly remember there, I almost made a trade on it and I didn't, going into their very first earnings report where they were going to drop how much money they'd made after finally monetizing mobile. They went from making $0 on mobile to like $1.something billion on mobile. They pulled the lever and boom. Money machine.
And it all shot up.
And it never looked back. And now it's, you know.
How much did it shoot up when they turned on the like destabilizing governments thing?
A lot, man. They love the destabilizing
government. So these can be tricky. I mean.
They can be very tricky. Twilio was another successful IPO that had a lot of hype and fanfare, but then it didn't live up to the expectations. It shot all the way back down to like the teens, but then they started to kind of find their footing and they rocketed back up. Now Twilio is an indispensable part of any growth portfolio.
You know what Tesla IPO'd at?
I want to say 15 bucks, 20 bucks.
No, the market cap.
The market cap was tiny. It was only a few.
7 billion.
Yeah, which is...
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And it's wild because like now this is, you know, the electric vehicle space has gotten so crazy.
Everything is crazy now.
Yeah.
Everything IPOs at such insane valuations, it leaves little room for the little guy to participate in any of the upside, so it seems.
Right.
Unless you buy what is the NerdWallet just went public at like a $1.8 billion valuation.
Damn.
You want to buy some NerdWallet?
Maybe. I feel like I use them for something, but I can't remember.
I use Credit Karma for my stuff.
One of them I like check what are good credit cards.
Buddy, you got me.
I know. This was before. That's why I don't use it anymore. That was before I knew you were the freaking points guy.
Yeah. If anybody needs referral codes, just DM me and...
I'll get points. I want to get in on the points.
I'll get points. You'll get points. We're all happy. Come on.
This show is slowly just going to devolve into a point scheme.
I just want to accumulate them. I don't want to use them. I just want to squirrel them away. Put them in my cheeks. Put those nuts in my cheeks.
But yeah, so there is a lot, and I hope we time this out. I hope this drops and Rivian IPOs the day.
Oh, that'd be tight.
That would be sick.
Dr. Scaringe, please.
Dr. Scaringe.
IPO on Monday.
But there's a lot
today
going on here. There's a lot to watch, especially with the electric vehicle space. I mean, we need to do it. Joe Biden says we're going to do it by 2030.
Hey, I got to get the electric car. My uncle, he was a car.
You ever see the video where he says, boy, could my dad drive a car?
No.
It's so weird.
He says, boy, could my dad drive a car?
He's driving a car. It's like to make him more relatable. And he's like in this old Corvette, I think. And he's like, you know, he's not all there up there. And he, which I don't blame him. I mean, he's a guy so fucking old. I feel bad for him. But he's just sitting in the driver's seat. At one point, he just goes, boy, could my dad drive a car? But I hope, you know, I hope something happens with the, like...
To Joe Biden?
No.
Oh.
I don't know. The charging network, though, I hope they do something to standardize it. It would be great to... Because, I mean, the when you're looking at the numbers for those electric vehicles sold, it's, you know, it's mostly Teslas, and then you got some... It's like the cheaper vehicles. You got some Chevy Bolts in the mix, some...
You know what charging network
I Nissan use? Leafs. What?
I use American Express.
Okay, he's trying to sell you more credit cards.
Yeah, I want those referral links.
But
man,
they said, I think with his infrastructure plan, they're trying to build at least like a half a million charging stations. And it's like...
And every time he does that, the charging stocks, there's Blink, there's Plug, there's, I don't remember which other ones, but they all shoot up for a little bit and then they just get sold off because they're like so overvalued and so far from profitability.
But if we don't...
We don't do it, who's going to do it?
Right, but I hope there's some kind of standard for, we're not just putting,
yeah,
it'll be so
USB,
much more expensive.
USB-C or something.
Right.
Yeah, don't not let Tesla, Apple, not Rivian, not, you
don't
know.
Let Apple take over the...
Yeah, but you got to make money, Emil.
I know, that's the thing, that's where the big, but you know, this used to be, I don't know, there used to be like a, I'm going to get it wrong, but there was like a, product standardization was not like a thing until, I think Herbert Hoover... As the Secretary of Commerce.
The vacuum guy?
No, the bad president during the Great Depression.
The guy who built the dam.
He didn't build it, but they named it after him.
Oh.
Like, as the Secretary of Commerce, I think in like 1920 or something, there was like, before he stepped in and issued product standardization, there was like 78 different types of mattresses. Like, you know how now you have like king, full, queen, twin?
There were 78 different size mattresses?
Something like that, yeah.
What were they called?
I don't know. Every company had their own, right? It wasn't like they...
78 different mattresses. I say bring them back.
Bring
back the innovation.
Bring back choice. I want to lay on a weird fucking mattress.
Yeah. Give me the... I don't know. Super king.
Super
queen.
King.
I have a queen.
I got a...
Because I am a queen.
Know. What's the difference between a full and a queen?
I don't know. A little bit bigger.
Okay. But so is there anything else you want to tell people if they're looking... If they're interested, if this comes
be
out...
Be careful. Read the risk factors before... and then... Yeah, take a look at the S1. It's worth looking at. And then Command F to search within the document for risk factors. And just take an hour or whatever.
It is hard
just
to tell.
Pour over.
Because like, just on a brief glance, it looks... I'm seeing like...
It's intimidating.
Amazon and Ford backed like...
Yeah.
Almost kind of new Tesla. Very cool cars. Great charging network. Seems tight. I'm in.
All right, well.
But then you look all the... Well, and
you
they
can also
put,
just wait for it to IPO, see how it does after a week, and dip your toes in if you so choose. But yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
To each his own. Their own. To each their own.
Should we leave it at that?
I think we should leave it at that. I think that's a good amount. We've covered so much.
We have covered it. We're going a little bit over.
No, we're going just how much we want,
right,
buddy.
Yeah, we did this on purpose.
Jeff Bezos...
There'll be more episodes. We'll get to the other stuff later. Why did you just say Jeff Bezos?
I don't know. I'm just thinking about it. It makes me sick.
That was weird.
Yeah.
Jeff Bezos?
I'll explain later.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Tell me off camera.
Anyway.
All right,
thanks
guys.
For tuning in,
thanks
folks.
For tuning in again.
See you next week.
We love
for
you.
Another...
Like, subscribe, comment, listen, watch, do whatever you want, you crazy freaks.
Scream. Take off your...
Scream, but don't follow people in Stanford backpacks. It's very... You're going to make them uncomfortable. We want everyone to be safe.
Yeah. Take care, everyone. Happy Halloween.